Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode number 26 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation and the Internet of Things become even more innovative. In this episode, my guest is Tim Wilson. Tim is a senior partner at Web Analytics Demystified and has been working in digital analytics since 2001. His work portfolio is very impressive and includes having managed the business intelligence team at a $500 million high-tech B2B company. He is well respected as a consultant, as an agency analyst, a great speaker, and an industry contributor. Tim describes himself as a marketer-friendly geek, so we'll learn more about that on the interview. He very generously shared with us today his insights as a data analyst and how, by focusing on the right questions, in other words, smart questions, we can get the most value from data on our online presence. We also talk about automating statistics, about baseball, photography, guitar, and cycling, so we cover a wide gamut. It's another fascinating interview. I learned a lot from Tim today, and I hope you will too, so stay tuned. This podcast is sponsored, as always, by InnovaBiz, where we help smart, innovative, growth-focused business owners grow their business by making their websites achieve more. Of course, at InnovaBiz, we do more than just build websites. We provide solutions to our clients' needs by leveraging the power of the internet in innovative ways. If you want to learn more, then go to innovabiz.com.au, our website, or contact me directly through the contact information there. Now let's find out more about Web Analytics Demystified, about all things data-driven goals from Tim. Let's get into the Innovation Hive and get the buzz from Tim Wilson.
This is the InnovaBuzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and today on the episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast, it's a great privilege to have with us, all the way from Columbus, Ohio, in the United States, Tim Wilson of Analytics Demystified. Now, Tim is a senior partner at Web Analytics Demystified and has been working in the digital analytics space since around 2001. He's got a very impressive work portfolio that includes having managed the business intelligence team at a $500 million high-tech B2B company. He's also worked for a number of high-profile brands ranging from Hewlett-Packard to Purina, to name a couple, working with them on their digital and social data and translating that data into actionable strategies that help their marketing. So, Tim, I think you describe yourself as a marketer-friendly geek, so welcome to the podcast.
It's good to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. Now, we met at the Google Analytics conference a few weeks ago here in Melbourne, and Tim gave a really great presentation on, I think it had a pirate theme around finding the buried treasure in analytics or a title to that effect. So hopefully we can learn more about that today.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because I know you've had an interesting background, and before we start talking about data and analytics and all those other geeky things, let's find a bit about you as a person. So where did it all start? When going back to your childhood, what did you want to be when you grew up?
That's a good question, and I'm really excited to be on this, you know, be on a crossing the Western pond from me, I guess the Eastern pond from you to chat about this. So it's interesting. I don't know as a child that I had a whole lot of ambition. Somewhere around secondary school or high school, as we call it in the States, I decided I wanted to be an architect because I was in a tiny little town in Southeast Texas called Sour Lake. And I had in my head that I was good at math. I'd be a good engineer, but I was also very creative, so I probably could be a good designer. And architecture seemed like the thing that would make me, you know, would leverage both of those strengths. But what I discovered is that I'm really not that great at design, and I'm probably not quite technical enough to be an engineer. But in a lot of ways, the space I wound up in of analytics still kind of bridges the creativity of, you know, problem solving and ideas and with a somewhat technical, because, you know, like it or not, the world of analytics, it's not just, you know, punching the magic analyze button. It's getting your hands dirty on kind of what data is being captured.
Yeah. Now, you did pursue studies in architecture, though, didn't you?
I did. I wound up with a degree in architecture. I think I knew by my third year that I desperately lacked the talent that some of my peers had, but I had spent a good chunk of my parents' money on tuition, so I figured I'd stick it out. So I think I lasted for about 2.5 years after college in architecture, and then somehow jumped from that to technical writing, and then jumped from technical writing to web marketing, because I was doing technical writing at a company that was kind of for and by engineers. And they wanted to, this was back in the late 90s, early 2000s, that they were kind of forward thinking on the internet and said, you know, we have a bunch of engineers who are our customers, and we have a bunch of really smart engineers who work here. And wow, if we could get some of our engineers internally to put content up on our website that is not necessarily selling our product directly, but is just a helpful resource, we could build kind of this online community thing. And I was a technical writer on that engineering side of things. And then because I could write and I had done a little bit of work with like intranets and early HTML hacking away with Microsoft Front Page, the thought was, well, gee, you'd be a good person to get over on our marketing team because you can talk to those engineers and help get some of that content up on our site. So that kind of was my entree to marketing, at really from kind of an early, you know, online community. We were stitching together Lotus Notes, you know, databases and calling it a community.
Yeah, that brings back memories. Yeah. Lotus Notes databases.
It does. And I'll still defend it. It's a lousy email client, but yeah. But man, there was stuff that we could hack together, you know, for internal use that I, as a reasonably technical business user, could build little helpful applications. Yeah. But it's hard to defend notes.
yeah, we had it as a email client, which was a disaster as an email client, but we built an awesome CRM and database out of it back in the early 90s, which was fantastic. And it's kind of the sort of system that you see, you know, online now as a software as a service type thing that people are charging pretty hefty monthly fees for.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, I think, the like Lotus Script and whatever the command language, you know, you could just kind of stumble along, and next thing you know, you've got an interface that people can enter stuff and get stuff out of. So, yeah.
Anyway, so you kind of got into the analytics space through a marketing and helping engineers talk to the marketers, if you like.
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, I was kind of managing that online community, and somebody needed to own the web analytics tool because we had one, and it was kind of the hot potato that nobody really wanted. So it just kind of was sort of tossed my way as, oh, well, the person who used to sit in the cubicle next to you used to do that, and they moved to another cubicle, so now it's yours. There wasn't a whole lot of, you know, logic behind it. And this was, yeah, back in like 2001. It was slow. It was clunky. Our website was pretty large because it had all these multiple Lotus Notes databases that were serving content. We had Oracle homegrown stuff. We had static HTML pages, and we were trying to kind of mine through, you know, log files with a tool that no longer even exists. And then as my career kind of pretty quickly, I moved from this online community thing to managing the web Marcom group, you know, which was kind of more of a classic Marcom role. The analytics came with me. And then I just kind of totally ran out of bandwidth. I'd like to think I have a lot of capacity and said, something's got to give. So I went to our business intelligence group and said, hey, why don't you guys, since you're already in all of our CRM and ERP and our data warehouse data, why don't you also take on web analytics? It's another source. I'll help train you up. I'll support you any way I can. I just don't have bandwidth for this. And they said, yeah, that makes sense. We got up to leave the meeting and I said, kind of shook my head and said, you know, the sad thing is this is probably what I had the most fun with in my job. You know, it's just the one that does the most, least logically fits on my plate. And they said, why don't you come back in the conference room? You know, we have an open role. And so instead I went to hand off a tool and I wound up giving, you know, I came with it and, yeah. And, you know, pretty quickly was then managing the BI team. But I knew within 6 months that I'd pretty much found my career home at that point.
Now, in those days, probably, you know, you were probably leading in the sense of, you know, people looked at business intelligence and they looked at a lot of numbers. And I think there was a lot of stuff that got ignored, particularly in the online space. I mean, it tended to be just financials and that kind of stuff. So how did you kind of build the awareness around that and you know, teach people the value of this kind of data?
So I was, you know, there are those things you look back on and it may take 5 or 10 or 15 years to realize sort of what a forward thinking company. The company is called National Instruments and they're like maybe a billion-dollar company now. I still stay in touch with them. They're out of Austin, Texas. But the founder and CEO was just a forward-looking guy. And so he figured out that the internet was going to be big. And it was interesting for them because not only is a marketing channel and a sales channel, but even for their products. So they I think, have continued to be out ahead of when it comes to, you know, the internet as a place where you could build products, and then even on to Internet of Things. A lot of what they do is on that front. So when, you know, somebody at National Instruments, it was kind of a legendary story there. There were, you know, a couple of guys who said, we should stand up a website. And this was, I want to say, mid-90s for a company that had a lot of SKUs and was selling very technical stuff. And they built it on a computer and set it over in a corner. And it just kind of grew by kind of increments until pretty quickly there was no one saying, oh, that channel's never going to amount to anything. It very quickly became seen as, even though it was a B2B company, that, you know, wow, this is a lead generation, potential lead generation engine. It is a potential, you know, CRM engine. It is definitely an e-commerce engine. You know, so now they've sort of been out in front and the data kind of came along with that. And I think that was one of those kind of unintentional genius moves, was that not only do we put web analytics in BI, which still today with a lot of the clients I work with, that's not the norm. You know, it's, you've got the finance analyst, you've got the BI group, and you've got the web analysts living, you know, somewhere else.
Yeah.
But we also had market research in the BI group, because we said it's all data. If somebody asks a question, and we were supporting all of sales and marketing, we wanted to say we should have a group that says, what is the best data source or data sources to answer that question? And, you know, that was 12, 13 years ago, and it just seemed logical from the inside. And I think it was just people a lot smarter than I were just intuited that made sense, and I just kind of accepted it. But then have kind of, you know, the rest of my career has been trying to tell other companies that have not intuited that, you know, they lived a lot longer with e-commerce off in one silo and, you know, the other channels in a totally different silo and struggling to realize that from a customer's perspective, you know, online and offline you know, aren't any different. They don't want to act like they're working with two different businesses.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a fascinating story. And I guess if you think about it in hindsight, you know, a National Instruments company, there's a natural fit there, isn't there? Because they're measuring stuff all the time. That's part of their product, right? I guess.
So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would still say at that time, there were some things that I and you, you know, you saw in Australia, like the big at the Google Analytics conference, there is still a massive lack of clarity. I feel like as the world has become more aware of data, the world is also the instincts of all these people trying to use data are often kind of dead wrong. And so a lot of what I spend the hammer that I beat constantly, or the drum that I beat, some metaphor in there, is that, you know, the data doesn't provide the questions and the answers. The data really is just there to provide answers, but you still need to be asking smart questions. And that's been kind of one of those challenges, is there are people saying, we have all this data, there must be value, so go look at the data and find value. And they're not really wanting to say, you know, there's still every bit the space for, or the imperative for creativity and ideas, and the data just helps, you know, validate those ideas. It's not a replacement for just, you know, generating ideas. That kind of little, I'm not sure exactly what you said that sent me off on that, that soapbox. So, but
that's, yeah, I mean, I think that's a really important point. And I, it took me quite a while when we were sort of in the early phases of the business and building websites. And we always put Google Analytics in the back end of the website and gave people access to their account to take a look at. And I just assumed it was something every website developer and designer did. And over time, I realized that hardly anyone actually did that. So we started telling people that we did it. It differentiates us. And so that was kind of the first step. And then we've gotten to the point now of saying, well, you know, let's take a look at that data and let's actually use the data to guide a strategy going forward. And then we get to the point of people saying, oh, wow, that's interesting. We're getting, you know, 1,000 hits or whatever it may be, or we're getting, you know, a 50% bounce rate. Is that good or is that bad? And so then we come back to the point you were making and saying, well, I don't know. It's really about, let's come back and ask the right questions and set up the you know, set up some goals around that, and then use the data to kind of set some direction. And I think it might have been Jim Stern that said, and I remember this one because this really resonated. I think he said that analytics or data without goals is narcissism.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And there's a spot definitely for, you know, for small businesses, for somebody who's, you know, straight out of school, you know, to jump into a tool that just has, you know, base tagging, or whether that's web analytics, whether it's social analytics, whether it's mobile analytics, and say, I just want to poke around and get a sense of what kind of data is here. As long as there's a realization that, you know, if I look at it and say, oh, I have a bounce rate of 50%, well, one, it's probably good for me to understand, what is a bounce rate? Does it matter? And then I need to stop and think, well, does it matter and do I care? And if I care, then why might that be happening, and what might I do to improve it, and what other, you know, data would might help me figure out why, you know, what's causing that. But I think it's pretty easy for people to get, there's so much data. The tools are providing more and more information. You know, Google's adding on, you know, demographic stuff. It's adding on, you know, more ability to kind of do pathing or flow navigation and multi-channel attribution. So there's more and more charts and visualizations to get lost in, which are fascinating and interesting, but you also, it can be colossal, you know, time wasters, you know, to dig into it.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I'm always amazed when I go in. I think I hardly ever go into a Google Analytics account and have a look around without finding something that was new since the last time I was in there. They must update it. They must update things, you know, at least every week.
Yeah. I mean, which is, and it's all valuable quality stuff, but it's like any tool, you know. It's like you look at, you know, take something like Microsoft Excel that's been around, seems like forever, and you know they're adding features with Excel 2010 and Excel 2013, but you know 98% of what people are using, 99%, maybe 99.5% was around in Excel 2003. But I think with digital, a lot of times it's, oh, what's the new shiny thing we're chasing? You know, it's, we want to do multi-channel, multi-touch, multi-session attribution. And it's like, well, if 90% of your traffic is coming to your site for the very first time, then really, does it really matter how much those 10%, how many, you know, they came from paid search and they came from paid search again? I mean, that's, I will have people ask a question that's kind of a good question if they were about six levels more mature in their evolution of analytics. They're not hitting the very, very basics of saying, what is the purpose of your site? Is it achieving that or not? And are we really instrumented and measuring and keeping an eye on that and improving it? It's kind of chasing, you know, what, you know, a tool released a new feature and there are a lot of blog posts on it. So people say, oh, I must use that feature. It's like, well, you should probably use the feature that was there 5 years ago that you've been ignoring, you know, first. Yeah. So
that's right. Yeah. Man. So avoid the shiny object syndrome.
I have been called the grumpy cat of analytics. So I think that might not have come out in the presentation, but I'm hearing it come out now.
Okay. Well, actually, you know, a lot of this resonates really strongly with me because I, you know, one of the things we emphasize when we go into any project, whether it's building a website or whether it's something other online stuff, is, you know, let's start with the objective and get the objective really clear and get it, you know, get on the same page with the objective and understand that. And then the next step is, okay, how do we know when we've reach that objective and what measures can we put in place to reach that? So, you know, what you're saying is basically, you know, don't get distracted by the shiny toys. Look at what's meaningful as a measure to guide the strategy.
Right. And I'm assuming, like, how many of the clients that you work with have full-time analysts? Is it rare?
Yeah.
It would be. Yeah. So that's kind of the tough thing too, is that there's a lot of data, there is some complexity to it, and there are lots, it's a tough competency for, you know, a small business to kind of fully ramp up and do in their spare time, even if they're really interested in it. But at the same time, there aren't a whole lot of you know, models. I mean, they kind of wind up needing to use some, you know, external part-time contractors or consultants or agencies, and you know, those guys need to be doing their work well and efficiently and having the conversations it sounds like you have with, let's really push and be clear that we have clear goals and objectives, because without that, it's narcissism.
Yeah. I do like that. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on a little bit more about the business. So what do you actually do on a day-to-day basis? Because I know you're a senior partner at Web Analytics Demystified, but you do a lot of other stuff. Is that sort of part of that role, or do you do things off your own bat?
Yeah, it's a title of senior partner. It's probably more senior consultant. The way that we work is, you know, we're a small consultancy by choice. We have various disciplines. I'm one of the two who kind of focus on actual analysis and process development with clients, and all of us are really, you know, passionate about doing the work. So kind of to a person, we both genders, we're not kind of in the, oh, I want to grow my team and bring a, you know, have a big team of consultants descend on a company and do analytics. So I actually, day to day, I am doing, I'm a I'm doing analysis and I do reporting and I do digging into the data for, you know, a small number of clients, you know, less than 10, more than 5 at any given time, and kind of helping them figure out. Sometimes they've got in-house consultants who need, you know, training and guidance. Sometimes they don't have internal analysts, and so I kind of am a proxy analyst for them. So I work with, you know, everything from, you know, large CPG brands that have, you know, 15 different brands, and those brands each have different agencies that are developing and managing their digital presence and their media presence, and those agencies have analysts, and you know, in that case I am sort of an extension of the in-house analytics team that are sort of the objective. You know, we don't have the only dog we have in the fight is, you know, the brand success. We're objective. We don't have an agenda. We want the paid search agency to look like it's doing better than the media agency. And so a lot of that is how developing standards and governance and processes. You know, in another case, there's a really large, like, you know, it's 8 figures a week of online e-commerce and they've got effectively one full-time web analyst. And so, you know, she's swamped, and I kind of handle some of her duties and sort of help her, you know, be a sounding board and kind of improve their processes and streamline things. So I kind of run the gamut of, you know, working with nonprofit foundation, CPG, e-commerce, all kind of primarily around on the web analytics front. It's Google Analytics and Adobe Analytics is just kind of where we kind of have the most expertise, but then also, you know, do some social, because social analytics is kind of part and parcel with that, you know, as well as mobile apps and mobile site analysis. So I don't quite have the glorious you know, kickback with the 3 martini lunches that a title like senior partner feels like it should warrant.
But it sounds like you love what you're doing, which is the important thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and add a lot of value as well.
Hope right.
So in terms of, is there something that keeps you awake at night that you worry about?
I worry about the industry, honestly. The world, the analytics industry. I don't worry about myself finding more business, because we've got this massive kind of supply and demand gap when it comes to talent, which my worry is that, you know, it's the bar, if the bar is too low for somebody to get in, if you wind up with, and I've seen it happen, we've been trying to hire a web analyst for 18 months. We haven't found anybody. Finally, somebody came in who could spell Google Analytics and they had a pulse, you know, so we hired them. And then that person winds up being completely out of their element, and they do a terrible job, which in and of itself, them doing a terrible job is not the travesty. The problem is that they train everyone around them that's what, yeah, you know, web analytics is. And so a lot of what I find myself kind of, you know, there's not enough hours in the day for me, you know, personally to go and re-educate all the people who need to be re-educated. And it's one of the reasons that I love, you know, speaking. I want to get out and talk to as many marketers really as possible, analysts too, but as many marketers as I can, to say, you know, look, your analysts can do some things really well, but there's a darn good chance that they're for a variety of reasons, or maybe not approaching things, they're not actually helping you become more mature as a business. You know, they are pulling the data that you asked them for, as opposed to saying, time out, are we really clear on our goals? Do we really know what success looks like? Are we are we recognizing that analysis starts with a hypothesis, it starts with an idea, and then we look at the data, as opposed to, you know, last week I got a request from a well-intended project manager saying, hey, we're going to redesign the website. Can you just analyze the current site and, you know, bring us your insights in a couple of weeks and tell us what you found? And I've been doing this for a while and I know the brand well and I can probably do that well. It's not going to be nearly as effective if instead we'd sat down and said, we're redesigning the site. Well, why? Like somebody said, we need to do a redesign of the site. I've asked for it two or three times. Like in the absence of, like, you have some inclination, some idea of why the site needs to be redesigned. It's probably not, we have extra money and we don't care whether we waste it or not. Why don't we spend it on redesigning the site? You know, so it's kind of like, oh, you're the analyst, go dig into the data, come back with recommendations, as opposed to, hey, let's sit down and have a conversation. Let's think like marketers. What do we think's going on? What do we think might be going on? I've been doing this for, I can do that. I can, because I've spent time as a marketer and I've worked with marketers a lot, and senior analysts can do an okay job, but it's still not at all a replacement for who are the stakeholders. Let's sit down and talk about what's keeping them up at night. You know, what are the questions they have? And then let the analyst say, okay, I can answer those questions. I can validate your suspicions, or I can tell you, no, don't worry about that. You think X is happening a lot, and I've got the data to say it's not, you know, go back to sleep. Yeah. And I'm afraid that there are too many people who are getting trained and conditioned, and because I guess I've run into those people as well, who they try to tell me how to do analysis. So I'm like, well, wait a minute, you know, you're paying me good money because you recognize you had a problem. If I come in and you tell me how to do analysis, and I'm trying to tell you that I've seen it go that way, and you're asking me to repeat the same thing that you didn't like the results for the last 3 years you've gotten, and yet you're telling me to do the same thing. Well, that's probably not going to work. So that's great. Thanks. As we're recording and then you're on one day and I'm on another day, you're now going to keep me up tonight. Thank you very much for bringing that anxiety back to the fore.
All right. Yeah. I think you make a really good point though around, and, you know, going back to things like goal clarity and what does success look like and what are we really trying to achieve? And, you know, I love to kind of take all the conversations back to that. And I recently had somebody say, and they're in my network, they said, could you do us a favor and just have a look at our website? We've just redone it. Have a look at it, see what you think. And I was kind of procrastinating on that a little bit because I thought, well, what do I do? Because they weren't going to pay me to do that. It was kind of like an implied favor. And it was early in the week of the analytics conference, and I was reflecting on your presentation, on Jim Stern's presentation. I thought, I'm going to go back, and basically I turned it around and I said, well, what exactly is it you want to achieve? And I did have a look at the site and I said, it's not obvious to me what you want to achieve. So I said, you know, maybe you should start by explaining what do you want to achieve and what does success look like, and maybe the website does reflect that, but I don't recognize it as a kind of a person that's outside the loop and has just come in as a visitor to your website. So I sort of gave a bit of feedback like that. And then the response came back, said, oh, we need to sit down and talk because you raised a lot of interesting questions there, which suggested to me that they didn't have the answers to them.
Well, and that's, you know, from an analyst perspective there, that actually reminds me of another regularly happens, and we were talking about this with some friends a while back, and it's, you know, sometimes somebody says our registrations, you know, we're trying to drive registrations on our site, the registrations are down, can you dig into the data and see why? And well, any good analyst, the first thing they do is actually go through the registration process. And I've had one client that it's happened more than once where I go through the process and I'm like, well, I click, you know, submit, And it told me that my password was no good. It didn't meet their criteria. And it told me exactly what I had to do. And I have a password that meets those criteria and it doesn't work. And so I'm thinking, you're asking me to look in the data and you have not even gone through the experience. You know, basically it was a development disconnect. There was another case when I did submit, as soon as I hit submit and I was supposed to get a coupon offer on the backside of it. And I got like a 503 server error. So then I called up another analyst and said, I don't want you to look at the data either. I want you to go through this experience and see if it's as busted as I think it is. And once I had three analysts, we'd all gone through, went back to the client and said, I haven't looked at the data at all. I just went through the experience and it's completely busted. I don't need to look at the data. And that's definitely something that analysts will preach. I mean, senior analysts, that's a mistake analysts will often make, is that they'll just live in the data and they'll forget that, you know, they should go be the customer a little bit, you know, and poke around the site.
Yeah. Yeah. See what's happening in the real world.
Yeah.
At the front end. Yeah. All right. That's really great advice. And so, you know, when you're not digging into data and trying to make sense of it and trying to help people learn what they should be doing in their marketing based on that data, what else do you do to keep balanced? How do you choose?
Well, so I do have kind of a absurd amount of leisure activities that are data related, and which I think speaks to somewhat my passion for the space. I've got three kids. One of them, up until about a year ago, played baseball, and I wound up getting, probably no shocker, a little into the stats on that. built my own scoring sheet, built a Excel spreadsheet that would generate all the stats. I now have that posted every year. I know when that's come around, I get a few emails from people who are downloading the score sheet. And again, I've got three kids, so that leaves, you know, that's my leisure time. I've got limited time, but I get outdoors as much as I can. I grab my camera as often as I can and get out on the kayak on the lake nearby and, you know, pretend that I know how to compose a picture here or there.
Another photographer. So, that's fascinating.
Well, yeah, but I've kind of checked out your portfolio, and I'm on the other end of amateur from you, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm still just playing around and learning things. Yeah, I did take 10 minutes yesterday because the canola fields are in full bloom yesterday, and I went out, there's one nearby here, it's just a massive yellow, and I thought, I've got to get out and photograph that.
So. Yeah, I'm trying to get better and better about recognizing when there's, you know, an opportunity, when the light is hitting, you know, such that it would be a good time to go hit some, you know, familiar haunt and see if I can get a new, new perspective on it.
Yeah. One of the things that, on photography, one of the things that, I found, fascinating, I set myself a challenge a couple of years ago. I did it 2 months, not consecutive months, but 2 months, because it's actually difficult to do, of taking a photograph every day, and then I would post it. So I'd hold myself accountable, post it to Facebook or something and get people to comment on it. And in doing that, it kind of forced me to go out and have a look at things. And I'd go out different days, and like you say, you'd go out and visit places that you've been to hundreds of times, but do it at a different day, or go and find a different place, or just look at different angles. So it kind of forced me to think about all the different ways I could actually photograph something, whether it's the light, whether it's a composition, whether it's something happening right at that time in the particular area. And I found that really fascinating. And as you do it, the longer you do it, the more familiar you become with all the little shiny toys, I guess you can call them, on the camera, all the features. And so, some of them become sort of more second nature, and you start exploring different ones and finding different stuff. So that to me is really fascinating. And I had a month in San Francisco recently where we did where we actually took vacation, and I went out and took about 100 average of 100 photos every day, and it was the same kind of experience.
Wow. Yeah, I took the great courses. They had some deal, and they had the Joel Sartori, a National Geographic longtime photographer. You know, and I'd done, you know, film back as a kid. So, you know, the basics of, you know, aperture and shutter speed, I was pretty solid on. But just getting him, it moved a little slow, but he really kind of reinforced, and he would just, you know, he hammered that in, like, get out, like, don't ever take one picture. Like, you've got digital, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
Get down, get closer, get up, you know, try it at a different, same spot, different time of the day, and, you know, figure it out. So if nothing else, that reinforced that I should be grabbing the camera more often. And I'm now convinced I'm starting down that slippery slope of, oh, I bet that next expensive lens would probably make me a better photographer. But I play guitar as well, acoustic guitar, and I'm equally amateur at that, but you know, same sort of thing, that I've moved past the realizing that no, it's a more expensive guitar is not going to make me a better player. It's certainly not going to make me a better singer.
Yeah, it makes it a pleasure to actually play, probably, because I know I'm a cyclist, so I've just bought a really expensive bicycle, so I'm still not any faster than I was before, but it is a real pleasure to ride it, though.
And there's a little bit of cachet that comes with it, right?
That's right. All right, well, we've talked about photography and cycling and music, guitar playing, all kinds of stuff. Let's look at the future then a little bit. So what do you see? Well, you talked a little bit about the challenges in the industry. What do you see as the future for the industry, and you know, what kind of innovations do you see coming down the track that people can look out for or even take advantage of?
So the one thing we know is the volume of data is not gonna decrease. I've realized how poor of a futurist I am. I was an early naysayer of the cloud and software as a service. I declared that Salesforce.com would absolutely never work, and certainly web analytics tools that were cloud based would never work, and both of those have been horrendously wrong. And we were actually, for my podcast, we were recording yesterday, and we were talking about Internet of Things and wearables. Actually, we were focused just on wearables. And so my head's still spinning a day later from that. I think the volume and complexity of the data and the interconnectedness of it, it's just going to keep going up. We're going to have more and more of an ability as consumers get more comfortable with it to actually recognize, oh, you're interacting with the brand on your phone. Now you're interacting on my website. Now you're interacting with, you know, some TV, some other screen display. That complexity, I think, is going to drive, it's a little scary because from analysts, it's going to drive a need for much, much richer tools. So I sort of see analysts, you know, the buzzword for the last 3 or 4 years has been, you know, data scientists. And I know a few people that I truly consider data scientists. I know more people who label themselves data scientists who I don't think are, but there are, you know, tools out there. There's this open source platform called R, which is a you know, kind of a programming scripting language designed just for data manipulation. And, you know, with big data, the world of Hadoop and pulling data in from different sources, there's a ton of technology vendors trying to, you know, provide a way to get that data integrated and manageable in a way that it can be analyzed. But I still see the race being, it's going to have to be people getting more sophisticated with the tools they're using. I don't think the tool is going to solve the complexity, but it's hard to imagine where we're going to be in 10 years. I sometimes joke that it may get so complicated that we just throw up our hands and just say, let's just go with our gut, go back to the Mad Men days and say, you know, let's just make a pretty cat picture and, you know, try to sell our product with it. But, yeah, I don't know. It's exciting, and I'm not sure. I'm got enough time left in my career that I'll be struggling with it.
Yeah, actually, I listened to that podcast a couple of days ago on that you did on R, and I guess, you know, you mentioned the Internet of Things, and it kind of got me thinking, you know, do you see a time where some of the data is actually collected by some tool and there's automatic adjustments made to whether it's, you know, a website or a social media campaign or whatever it may be, based on what the data is telling you, you know, through some sort of programming thing and through the Internet of Things?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the promises of machine learning, is that if you can connect this stuff in, where you've got the smarts. The funny thing is, it still goes back to, you have to have what success, that has to be defined, and it you know, it could be a successful customer experience, which you could, you know, have a value mapping of, the customer has to be successful. If they're successful and I'm enabling them to be successful, then I'm successful. Okay, Internet of Things, I'm going to have data coming from that person or from some product of mine that they own. What does success look like? Now I can go tell a machine, this is what success looks like. So sit there and fiddle around with whatever levers can be pulled and learn from my body of customers, which leads them to be, you know, the most successful. But it's, you know, we're talking on a website, we're saying, I want them to complete a goal and convert, you know, to purchase, to register, to view this content. Mm. We start talking about Internet of Things, I really want my customers to be, you know, successful with the watch that I sold them, or the shampoo that they're using, or the razor that they're using. And I was having a discussion again last night about, when does the product, when the blending of product management and marketing, I think that's coming, and Internet of Things and data is going to play into that. I'd actually talked to a guy named Lee Asensio a while back, and he was commenting that with mobile apps, a lot of times it's product managers who are kind of more kind of in the driver's seat than websites, which maybe have more product marketers, maybe putting words in his mouth, or marketers, web marketers. And he said product managers are a lot more kind of inherently clear in their minds what they want the app to do. So in a sense, it can be easier to work with them with the data, whereas marketers sometimes can get kind of off in the, oh, we're trying to drive awareness or consideration, mm-hmm. or, you know, provide a immersive brand experience. But I think those could be, Internet of Things can be bringing those together, where it becomes that much blurrier between, they became aware of my product, they purchased the product, they're using the product, and it's not discrete stages like that. It's kind of blended, because there's, I'm getting data about what they're doing all along the way, and have the opportunity to react and provide a better product, better service, better experience.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. Great insights. Thanks. Okay, well, you know, we've been going for quite a while, so I really appreciate your time. So I think we should move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, which is designed to help our audience, and they're primarily innovators and leaders in their field, to get some tips from your experience. So I'm going to ask a series of five questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful one-line answers that are going to blow everybody away.
No pressure.
So the first one is, what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative in what they do?
I'd love to say be clear on their goals and objectives, but I'm probably going to say be passionate about what they're trying to do.
Yeah, that's great advice. All right, and what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or products?
This starts out definitely outside of analytics. It's trying to really think through, either in my personal experience or what I'm observing, where are challenges, where are points of friction. Inefficiency drives me berserk, and so I'm kind of tactically oriented, but you know, find a problem that it's like, nobody likes that, nobody enjoys that, doing that thing, how could I solve it? And I'd say I'm not very good at it, and I'm blown away with the people out there, you know, the Steve Jobs of the world, who seem to have just had that wired into their nature.
Yeah, that's it's certainly, I don't know whether it's a talent or a mindset. I mean, I certainly love problems and solving problems and the challenges, but not at that sort of level, obviously. otherwise, I wouldn't be here. So what's your favorite tool or system for either, you know, improving your own productivity or, you know, taking things away and allowing you to be more innovative?
So I am right now on a big, well, I've been on a list kick for a long time. So on the productivity, I am currently a Wunderlist user and have been for probably a year. So I am a big, big fan, like a list maker, from a productivity, because then I don't have to ever sift through my email. If I have a to-do, it goes on my list and I can sort it there. I am also a huge fan of Slack. The amount of email that has decreased for us internally, that's kind of my current new favorite communication platform.
Yeah, Slack's fantastic, isn't it?
We've
adopted that now, and that's just sort of eased my email burden quite a bit. I played with Wunderlist a little while ago, but I'm not using it currently. Do you know, as a list fan, do you know Workflowy?
No.
Oh, you should have a look at Workflowy. As a list fan, I think you'll love that too.
Yeah, that bounced around. Like I had, you know, I've got one client we use Asana, and I've got, everybody kind of has their favorite. I used to work off of a notebook for a number of years, you know, just writing a list in the notebook, and I'd get the satisfaction of, you know, crossing off an entire page and flipping to a new page. But my list is, it never gets down to zero. So digital works a little better than recopying lists.
All right. What's the best way, you know, to keep a project or a client on track?
So defining the goals and objectives, defining the endpoint, defining success, and then, you know, communication. So I think I am married to a project manager. I mean, she's not actively doing that and getting a paid salary for it, but she's wired for it. And I do it well enough that I think I've watched cases where, you know, if you don't have a work breakdown, if you're not clear on what needs to be done next and what the obstacles are, you're going to just look back in 3 months and say, why aren't we where we expected to be? But we also have to define where we're trying to go.
Yeah, that's great advice. And finally, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves, either as an innovator or as an analyst or as a marketer, in whatever space that you choose?
Well, at the risk of using mild profanity on your podcast, is that okay? I'd say you have to give a hoot. You have to give a hoot. Maybe I won't go with that. I think it's the same thing about being to be more innovative. You got to figure out what you're passionate about and then just be passionate about it. I think that's kind of held me in such good stead in my career that I'm doing something I absolutely love, and I'll happily talk to anyone about it at any time because I think it's so much fun. And I think that comes through that even when I'm cranky and grumpy, it's because I actually care. So from, you know, blog posts to doing podcasts to going to conferences, that's kind of been it. Some people will say, oh, you know, you've really worked, you know, developed this personal brand. I'm like, well, no, I just kind of love this stuff, and I'll, you know, it's going to be every outlet. And I think I look at the people that I kind of, you know, admire and respect, and that's the same thing. They clearly are in the niche that they are passionate about.
Yeah, that's great advice. And you know, you make an interesting point there in terms of people talk about personal branding and, you know, strategic, being strategic about your personal brand, and they give you how-to lists, speaking of lists. But unless you're passionate about it and you really do care about making a difference in that particular space, then, you know, you can kind of go through the process, but it shows that you don't, you know, you're a little superficial.
So, and it winds up being work. Like, it is, you're like, I gotta check this off the list because I have to do it because that's what the personal branding guru said to do. And God, I dread it every, as opposed to saying, wow, I'd, I really want to tell people about this exciting thought I've had. I'm going to write a blog post, you know? So
yeah, that's great.
Life lessons.
Okay. Well, this has been fabulous. So I finally, then I guess what's the number one piece of advice you'd give any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field? And I think we've probably covered it there.
I think that was it. I think same. Yeah.
All right. Before we move on then, who else would you like to see me interview on the Innova Buzz podcast and why?
There are a lot of people.
We got time.
You know, there's a guy, he's over here in the States. His name's Josh Mannion, and he's just one of the more fascinating people. He started a digital analytics agency consultancy. He then saw a problem, a need, and developed kind of on the side a technology to solve that. He wound up then spinning that off. He now heads up that company, which is a tag management system, company called Insighten. Along the way, he's a chess grandmaster, and as he was spinning up the technology side, he was just doing basically stunt marketing at conferences that was some of the most entertaining and memorable stuff. And it all goes back to this. I look at him as a guy who is just he is pleasant, nice, super sharp, and super, super passionate about, you know, solving problems. So he is one guy.
That sounds exciting. So good. Josh Mannion, look out. Coming to invite you onto the podcast courtesy of Tim Wilson.
I should give him a heads up.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea. All right. Well, thank you very much for all the time you've spent with us and all the insights you've shared with us today, Tim. Where can people reach out to you and say thank you for all that you've shared?
Sure. So on Twitter, I am TG Wilson. On email, this is where our company name's a little bit of a mouthful, but tim@analyticsdemystified.com. Or they can also, we talked about this. We've got a podcast that's right about the same number of episodes as this one, the Digital Analytics Power Hour, which is the format of that is myself and two other guys, a guy named Michael Helbling and a guy named Jim Kane. And kind of inspired by all three of us loving to go to conferences, yes, for the content during the sessions, but Jim Stern is also a big time proponent of the lobby bar, that some of the best stuff of conferences is the discussions that happen after, you know, in the evenings in the lobby bar over a few drinks. Yeah. And that's kind of the format of our the podcast every 2 weeks, and we take a digital analytics topic and we pour ourselves a drink and we hop on Skype and we tackle that analytics topic and really have fun doing it. I love talking to people, so
that is a fun podcast. I can tell you have fun doing that one, so we can definitely recommend that. And we'll post links to all of those things underneath the blog post when we publish it. So, Tim, it's been really great to have you on the podcast. Thanks for sharing your time and your insights with us today. I've really enjoyed myself. I hope you have. I've learned quite a bit, and you know, there's been some really valuable lessons there, I think, for everyone. Let's keep in touch. I wish you all the best for the future, and certainly in what you're trying to do to elevate the profile of analytics and also the quality of what analysts do for the marketplace and for people using analytics. So thanks again.
Awesome. Thank you. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on, and best of luck with you as well.
Thanks, Tim. That was certainly another fascinating interview, and Tim shared a lot of great information and insights. We had fun doing this interview. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did and take away some useful information at the same time. All the show notes for this episode will be at innovabiz.com.au/Tim Wilson. That is T-I-M-W-I-L-S-O-N, all lowercase,
all one word, no funny hieroglyphics, you know the drill by now, innovabiz.com.au/Tim Wilson. That will have all the links and everything that we spoke about on today's episode there that you can just click on and learn more. Tim suggested I interview Josh Mannion, the founder of Inciton. So Josh, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from me for the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Tim Wilson. I'd like to thank you for listening to the InnovaBuzz podcast. We really appreciate our audience and we'd love you to review this podcast, particularly because your feedback will help us to improve what we're doing. And of course, it also helps us get found. You can review us at iTunes or Stitcher. And while you're there, please subscribe so that you'll never miss a future episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and keep innovating.